Welcome to
the Plant-Based Podcast.
In case you didn't know already, plants are amazing. You can
eat them,
wear them,
drink them,
nourish your skin with them,
grow them,
love them,
and be inspired by them. So why not join us on the Plant-Based Podcast as we speak to the movers, shakers, and growers in this amazing plant world.
This episode of the Plant-Based Podcast is brought to you by our friends at Natural Grower. Launched in 2019, their award-winning liquid fertilizer and soil conditioner is made entirely from maize. Visit naturalgrower.co.uk to nurture your soil and boost your plants and veg. Enter PBP15 for a 15% discount as a PBP subscriber.
Okay, we're going to dig into the world of vegan ready meals today with Alex, the founder of All Plants, and the recipe developer, Joey. So you may have seen them on TV recently. They've got a few new TV ads out there kind of extolling the virtues of All Plants, which are a really easy way of following a vegan diet, but with the most convenience. So let's say hello to you guys and start to tell us kind of where this all came from. Like, the company's still quite young, but tell us how it was founded and the journey that you've had so far.
Yeah, so we're just over 3 years old now as a company. We don't tend to like to think of what we're doing as ready meals, because really, when we started and to this date, the whole point of All Plants is, you know, how can we inspire more people to eat more plants? And in the same vein as you, connect them with the role of plants in our diet and our health as people, but also in the health of our planet. And that was very much, from the outset, what we were looking to do and will continue to do as we grow. So today we make prepared meals. We have a big kitchen. We're actually just outside the kitchen now as we record this, where they'll today be cooking about 5,000 meals.
Wow.
So we're making a lot of food, and that stretches now across meals, across breakfast, across puddings.
Breakfast as well, wow.
And we've got more to follow this year. So really, what we're trying to create with All Plants is a platform that introduces people to more plant-based diet and gives them kind of the inspiration and kind of new ways of exploring it through taste, through their health, through convenience. It's a little bit of a spin on what you said, but that really was what got us started. And we started off with supper clubs. A couple of months later, my brother and I started delivering to people's doors, originally like by foot by bus. I remember just being on a bus.
It's amazing.
That's how good business is built.
I mean, it was a bit crazy, but yeah. And then over time, we sort of graduated and matured both the way we make the food and also obviously the whole process and experience for a customer to make it just as easy as possible and make sure that, you know, we're delivering the best quality we can. And that actually takes us to today where, yeah, we just launched this kitchen a couple of months ago. And we're really excited because what we've done now is set us up for the next couple of years, really. And this year we're bringing sort of 30 new dishes to the menu, more breakfasts, more puddings,
pudding
size, like there's a lot coming.
Music to my ears.
That's kind of it in a nutshell. And we're a team of about 90
100, I think.
So you've gone from delivering via the bus
to
90 people in just a few years?
In just a couple
of
years.
Awesome.
That must feel amazing.
It's really exciting. It's gratifying to see that people are interested in eating more plants. And when we look at how the changes in people's diets over the last few years, it's actually really crazy. We did a study last summer and it showed that 57% of the UK have considered, they're not going to do it, no way, but they've considered at some point, I wonder what it would be like for me to change to a plant-based diet. Like, maybe I should do it.
And outside of January.
January.
So actually, like, there's a really kind of there's a big kind of lifestyle change happening. A lot of people now identifying as flexitarian,
or,
you know,
There's so many different variations.
All these things. I've got a friend who's a vegan, so he he looks after chickens.
Okay.
And
then,
I love that.
But then at the same time, he eats mostly plant-based
diet. Oh, so he has plant-based diet, but eats eggs. Okay, so this
some of
the guys who follow us and listen to this will have their own allotment. They eat a plant-based diet, but they still eat the eggs that the chickens produce because they're looking after the chicken, they've rescued the chicken, and they're happy to eat their eggs. So they're called a vegan.
I think it's a self-vegan. So that he actually when he rescued his chickens, they were kind of like bald and in a very difficult place.
Yeah.
And he's they now like flourish, full of feathers. I think for us as a brand, as All Plants, we're always just trying to be as permissive as possible, but just create really good food and make it easy for people.
But I think you came at just the right time as well, as people wanted to follow these diets and needed that convenience too.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, back to the very beginning when you decided to do this, obviously it's all about the food and, you know, getting great food to people, and it's a business. But do you eat a plant-based diet?
Yeah.
So you are plant-based.
So the reason it really started is my brother and I both very much, like, at the same time, very weirdly changed our diets.
Did you have like a little discussion one night?
It was a couple of weeks later where he realized, I said to him that I was actually kind of doing this vegan thing. At the time, I was being very I was scared to almost admit it because it was quite out there still, and I wanted to be normal, not weird. So I was like, I'm actually eating vegan at the moment. It's just a test. I'm not going crazy. Don't worry. And he was like, oh really? Because I've been eating veggie for the last month. And I was like, okay, cool. Up your game. And around Christmas time, we'd already talked about starting something together, and by that point, I think this is now sort of Christmas 2014-ish, or maybe 15, Christmas 2015. We were having a chat, and we'd both gone on this journey where we'd realised how important it is for the world to switch to a radically more plant-based diet. There's so many reasons. The climate reasons are huge. Even a couple of weeks ago, The Economist published data around the true impact of, I think you half your carbon footprint if you switch to a vegetarian diet. And then if you go vegan, it's like another 15% off that. So just eating a more rich plant-based diet, super, super important. And then also from a health perspective, we don't need to eat that much meat, that much protein. And there's so much variety you can get from
it's not as good for, I eat meat a lot, but I don't necessarily feel good on that. Do you know what I mean? Right. And I will admit that. And, when I talk to you about how you feel.
Say something to you.
I know, but I really enjoy eating meat. That's the thing as well. But I know it's not the best for me.
And we're both Greek, right?
Yeah.
So we grew up, at least, eating a lot of meat, especially
And to have a vegan plant-based diet.
Yeah.
A Greek plant-based diet, vegan, would be impossible.
It's still unusual, let's say. But I think I had a similar thing to you where, well, what I tried to do originally was just like switch up different food groups to try and figure out what was making me feel lethargic or bloated. And what I realized is as soon as I pulled back on the meat in my diet, I had much less.
It's just that psychology of meat feeling like you need to have it, isn't it?
I don't know.
I don't know.
But obviously, you managed to change that, Ellen, in your
I've been a vegetarian. I was a vegetarian for years. And then I actually switched to plant-based purely because I had indigestion. And I kept getting indigestion. And someone just said to me, why don't you try cutting out dairy as well? And I was like, I love cheese. I don't think I can cut out cheese. And then we actually done a podcast of Hench Herbivore, who's like a PT trainer and nutritionist and all of that. And the next day I went vegan. I just cut it out. Next day I cut out all dairy, so I'm fully plant based. And after 3 weeks I had no more indigestion ever. Wow. And like my skin is better, I feel better, I have more energy, more clarity of mind. And that's the thing I think that really hit me. It was the clarity of mind. And I think that we have normalized eating animals and animal produce because that's what we've done for such a
It's the food you're given when you're a
but
kid.
But it isn't normal.
That's
just how I see it. So I went on from the selfish point to then realizing the impact on the planet and the harm to animals. And
that all of that combined together just made sense to me. And I grow my own food on the allotment and I eat all plants. And it's like, I don't need meat. We shouldn't be doing this. And then it becomes this whole big thing. Do you know what I mean? And now I can never go back. I would never go back. Mm-hmm. And my husband, who's a massive meat eater, a bit like you, I said to him on the very first day, right, I'm going to do this. Can you just do it with me for 3 weeks? So it's easier for me to shop and cook and stuff. And he's like, no way, I love milk, I love cheese. Anyway, I kind of grind him down a little bit over a day. And he agreed. And he's never gone back either.
As well. Mm. That's brilliant.
So he's full vegan. Absolutely.
See, my wife, we've been through the, like, up and downs on it. She's gone a bit veggie, then pulled back, gone a bit vegan, pulled back. She has meat a couple of times a month, has fish a couple of times a week. And yeah, I think everyone has their own needs, I think. And like, I guess what we're trying to do as much as possible is make it really easy to try and enjoy it. And, you know, on certain nights, invite people to like dance.
Sure. Do you know, I do strongly believe, as much as I have very strong beliefs about it, I wish everybody had a plant-based diet. I do believe that everyone has a choice. Animals don't have a choice, but this is a whole other topic of conversation. But if everybody could just eat more plants, this would make the biggest difference. So what you are doing is just is helping people to incorporate more plants in their diet. And actually, you guys really helped me and my husband out when we started, amazing. Because I'm terrible at cooking, a bit better now. But actually having those meals did make a huge big difference. Tasty good food, you know, when my husband was very much like, oh, we're going to eat, you know, we're going to eat lettuce all the time. And we were having these amazing, you know, easy to cook, full of flavour meals from you. So, you know, that's a genuine, I'm not saying that because you're here we're doing this podcast, but I did, it genuinely did help.
I would say, for me, the problem is I'm on the go a lot and I'm then in different countries and it's so much more difficult to then follow a plant-based diet or not eat meat or not to have bread. But Ellen's kind of shaking her head, but you can do it. But for me, that you get a lot less choice. And I hate compromising on anything. And also you need something that you can just walk along with and eat in your hand. And that is usually something that's bread-based. You know, the content doesn't have to necessarily be meat, but it's hard. So my suggestion to you, Alex and Joey, is that you should develop like a range of wraps or kind of like, you know, meals that you can have in the refrigerator at like a railway station or something like that.
That's the worst place for food.
Railway station or like a BP garage when you're on the road or something. So I would propose that you give us 5% commission.
Well, we do have an NCD.
And don't say you already had the idea.
We've got an NCD meeting this afternoon. So oh, new category development.
That's helping the world.
Pop that on the agenda.
But I think it is time to bring you in, Joey, because we want to talk about how the recipes are developed. Kind of how does that work? What's the first one you ever developed? And is that now the most popular?
That's a good question. The first one, so I joined in November 2018. And the first one we did when I joined was the spiced aubergine tagine, which I'm still super fond of. And it won a great taste award last year, which is really cool.
I actually had it for dinner last
year. Did you?
Oh, there you go.
Alex has it.
You must have all the free dinners by anyone.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
So it's a sort of very rich and complex, quite earthy sort of tagine based stew. It's got some lovely unsulfured dried apricots in it to naturally sweeten it. So we don't sweeten with any kind of additional sugars other than natural.
Because that's something you assume with ready made meals that they're going to be full of salt, sugar, all of these things that you shouldn't have.
And I think that's our big point of difference and why we don't really wholly identify as ready meals. I think a better way
What do you call them? Have you got a better phrase for
that? That's a good question. Chef-prepared?
Chef-prepared meals.
I think the best way to think of them, and this is genuinely how they're cooked, is sort of, you know, at home, some people, there's a trend towards batch cooking, and then you portion it down and freeze it.
Okay.
It's almost like it's like outsourcing your batch cooking. So it's still handmade, it's chef-prepared on a larger scale, and then you have a beautiful handmade meal in your freezer that maybe you didn't have time to prepare yourself, but it very much is of that calibre.
Okay.
So it's got the unsweetened, the unsulfured dried apricots in it, some roasted sweet potato, roasted aubergine, chickpeas, lots of chickpeas, and then a bulgur wheat side.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's quite authentic.
What's the bulgur wheat?
Just fresh parsley and a bit of lemon. It's quite a neutral side because there's so much sort of complexity and intensity in the tagine.
And that's what makes them more exciting as a vegetable dish, because I imagine a lot of people that are meat eaters come up to it, it's like, I don't want to eat just vegetables, but when you've got that complexity of flavours,
it's a different level, isn't it? You can do so much with vegetables and nuts and herbs and spices,
when it comes to a meat centric diet, let's say, most of the flavour comes from the spices, the salt, all those things you add to it, which are largely nature bound to begin with, part of the earth in some kind of way.
I think that's why I've learned to cook a little bit better since being vegan, because you do experiment,
figure out.
I definitely agree with that, and I think it forces you to be creative. So I've sort of cooked, I've been a chef for 13 years, and I've sort of was an omnivore chef, or whatever you call it, a normal chef, historically, and switched to
What's normal?
That was air quotes, by the way. Swapped to being a kind of veg-centric chef and launched a veg-centric supper club about 6 years ago, and then specialised in vegan cooking about 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
And it makes you a better chef, because you have to think so creatively. You know, anyone can put a steak in a pan or chicken in an oven, and thanks to the Maillard reaction, it will, the proteins will caramelise, and you'll have something with a myriad of flavour molecules, and you've done absolutely nothing. You know, whereas with plants, you have to, all those things I was talking about, you know, the spices, the garnishes, do you want to put duck on it? What about some toasted nuts? You kind of have to think around the dish a little bit more. It makes you more creative. It makes you try new things. Because while plants are so fantastic and so versatile, they're not going to do 90% of the flavour work for you in a way that a steak might. If that's your thing. I agree. I think a lot of friends who now cook more veggies would agree with what you've said, is that it makes them a better cook.
It does. And also growing, because obviously I grow my food and herbs stuff like that. Just experimenting with growing different types of herbs, you know, not just, you know, I know you have your rosemary, your lavender, your thyme, but just, you know, like the lemon thyme and the orange thyme, just like, just trying different stuff and then trying that in recipes. So,
and growing the things you can't buy, like tarragon.
Can I ask one question before we move on? Like, I wonder how long it takes you to develop the standard recipe. Like, is that 2 weeks or how?
That's a good question. Yeah. It's a little bit like how long is a piece of string, in that some dishes, myself and the junior development chef are always chasing the perfect like V1 cook, which is version one, where we get it in one. It's never going to happen. So some dishes will go through just a few iterations, which might be half a dozen.
Okay.
And all the while we're thinking kind of through three different lenses. So one is an appropriate cost per unit, one is our nutritional parameters, which is the lack of or not too much salt, no added sugar, etc.
Source of protein,
fiber, etc. You know, are we a vitamin source of vitamin C, all those kind of nutritional credentials that we aspire to have in every dish. And then thirdly, it has to be feasible at scale. So we've always got one eye on production. We think this is easy enough doing 10 serves, but how about when we scale it up? So those three things guide the development process, as well as obviously first and foremost flavour.
Do you have a tasting panel? Who gets to test them?
That's a good question. Yeah. Al gets involved.
Well, we have a couple of different ways of doing that. So we have our internal team. So we all gather around. So we're just over the wall from where we are in this little room we're in right now. There's a smaller kitchen where we all gather around and taste. But then with our first kind of run of dishes that we make, we only make a small number, and then it depends on what the dish is. Sometimes we give them to a group of customers and ask for feedback. Sometimes we present them as launched and then see how people react to them. So really, our customers are our greatest kind of
resource.
They become the taste jury, if you like. They decide is a dish good enough. And we've had dishes in the past, we've launched it, and we've had a lot of feedback, and we've just had to change it and make tweaks as we go along, and that's something that we kind of play into, we think, is a really important part of the community we're trying to build.
So we were talking about, obviously I do a lot of my own cooking, and then on the evenings where I don't want to cook, I have all plants. What's the difference in nutritional value between cooking fresh at home, and because obviously you're cooking fresh and then freezing it, so what's the difference in nutritional content there, do you know?
I would say very little. So I'm not a nutritionist, just before I make any sort of sweeping claims. But so all of our dishes are less than 2 grams of salt per serve. So the recommended daily salt intake is 6 grams. We think it's one of your three meals a day, so that's very appropriate. Kind of calorie band is between, I think it's like 350 and 550, maybe 600 on the upper end.
Yeah.
Again, very appropriate if you're seeing dinner as the sort of main meal of the day. And it's sort of fresh vegetables, and that's about it. So it's very, very true to what you may prepare at home.
Yeah.
But from the question of like, how does the nutrition deteriorate or something with time? The fact that it's frozen means that gets that locks in. So,
sure.
So the way that we cook means as soon as it's cooked, yeah. it's literally frozen immediately. Mm-hmm. So the nutritional kind of excellence of the food is quite a high bar.
Yeah,
if you like.
Okay. It doesn't really decrease.
And so the opposite would be any kind of, if you buy a ready meal from a fridge in a supermarket, mm-hmm. that will have been either sitting there for a couple of days or in the warehouse, and that is deteriorating at
for
a
sure.
much faster pace.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Equally, if you cook at home and put it in the fridge overnight,
yeah.
it's deteriorating, but because it's frozen, mm-hmm. basically there isn't mm-hmm. deterioration.
Yeah, okay, this is very cool. Mm-hmm. Anyway, thank you so much. That's the end of part one, but in part two we'll be back with Alex and Joey, and we'll be talking a little bit more about the meals mm-hmm. and maybe a little bit more about that vegan substitute.
Mm-hmm. And we'll be salivating all the way.
This episode of the Plant-Based Podcast is brought to you by our friends at Natural Grower. Visit naturalgrower.co.uk to nurture your soil and boost your plants and veg.
So if you're ready to swap your sad shepherd's pie for a sumptuous stir fry, we're here with Alex and Joey from All Plants. And because this is part two of the podcast where we talk about how the subject relates more to the listener and what they can do at home, mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you, what are the most popular All Plants meals that you have in the range, and what sort of customer feedback have you had?
Awesome.
In a word.
Oh no, sorry.
I like the confidence.
I'm an awesome question. But we do get awesome feedback mm-hmm. on our lasagna gnocchi, which I think is my personal mm-hmm. favourite. I think it's fantastic. It's been one of our best sellers for a long time, but we've recently done EPD, so existing product development project, on it to optimise it even further.
Mm.
It's got a slightly sweet butternut squash based bechamel on top, mm-hmm. Layers of classic lasagna, and then the ragu is really deep and umami, so we kind of emulate the texture of mince with shredded mushrooms, chestnut mushrooms, some nibbed walnuts, and pui lentils. So
wow.
the kind of the texture's there, the complexity of flavour's there.
The salivating's real.
It's really delicious. I love the lasagna.
Thank you.
I do like the shepherd's pie as
really?
Well. Yeah, I quite like that one. Especially in the wintertime.
Very comforting.
What's the shepherd in there then? Or the pie?
Shepherdless pie.
So what meat is
it's a similar
or?
A similar kind of base.
Similar concept.
Oh, yeah.
Lentils, peas, carrots, texture. Like we rely on mushrooms for our kind of quote unquote meatier ones.
Oh.
So we have a veg prep machine, and we freshly cut julienne. So we'll julienne chestnut mushrooms to create that texture.
I think this is a relevant point to actually ask about kind of those substitute words that are used in plant-based eating. Do you
know
what
you
I mean?
Because you haven't mentioned like tofu, seitan, any of that. Do you not use that stuff?
We use tofu.
And
tempeh.
Okay.
And tempeh, yeah, recently. We part of what we do and what we've kind of been made part of our ethos, if you like, is focus on real whole foods and trying to use them to create both nutritional experience but also mm-hmm. flavour experiences. And we found that largely...
So, that's fine. Don't worry.
It shows how progressive All Plants
is. Exactly.
It's a building site still, because this is your new warehouse, isn't it?
It'll stop.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we found that largely we can do that. But we have introduced tofu and tempeh just to learn about, you know, is that what people like? Is that what people want? And in particular dishes, it works really well. So we've just launched a tempeh rendang curry, which is really...
Okay.
Yeah, it kind of... The tempeh there is traditional as well in the dish,
yeah.
regardless. So playing into that.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we're kind of talking about like those meat substitutes, and it's all very well to use them as ingredients, like you say with the tempeh, as traditional in Malaysia to use that tofu in Asian dishes. But what I find really weird, and we talked about this off recorder, was when someone pretends like a burger is a burger, or a steak is a, you know, I don't know, steakette or something. It's like, or cheese. Like, I've had this cheese that was a kind of faux feta cheese, but it tasted like a weird gorgonzola. Mm. But I was thinking, don't pretend that's feta cheese, because it's actually something cool of its own accord. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts on that? Because it's getting a bit silly, this substitute generation sometimes.
I think that the reason they exist are, you know, today we've got about 20% of the UK are veggie, vegan, pescatarian. And then we've got a huge number as well who are like self-proclaimed flexitarians, of which even this year, 25% of those people are looking to eat even more vegetarian. Mm. And so like they're trying to, by branding them in such a way as an ex cheese, a feta cheese or a burger, it's trying to introduce people to this more plant-based
diet.
Make
it more accessible.
Make it more accessible. Yeah. Make it easier to find the parallels so that people don't come unstuck when trying to find vegetarian food that suits them. Now, I think Joey and I kind of agree that we don't think this is a long-term thing because there's so many amazing ways of making plants taste great, like you're saying. And so this is almost like a stepping stone, we think, to a more just all about this plant-rich diet that, you know, in the meat world, you can have, what, like 6 different types of meat, whereas plants, there are just thousands of varieties and flavors. So we think it's a stepping stone. That's one of the reasons why we don't really play into it, because it's not, you know, nutritionally, they're never...
They're often processed and really as rubbish as meat. Yeah.
No, they're not as rubbish as meat.
But they're pretty bad. They're not good for you, though. You know when you see these like chicken nuggets that are this kind of processed weirdness? That's not as good as a pile of vegetables, is it? You know?
I mean,
and I think it gives vegan foods a bad name. And it kind of makes me a bit... No, but I've seen vegans out there that are on such poor diets.
Well, look,
because they're not eating fresh
stuff.
Anybody
can be on a bad diet. So if you're a meat eater, you can eat bad food.
Yeah,
if you're a vegan, you can eat bad food. Eating a plant-based diet is actually different because you are eating plants. You know what I mean? But everyone's allowed to have a little bit of junk food every now and again.
But what about
the
people that are always eating the vegan junk food? That's not good,
is
it?
That's the same as anybody eating a junk food diet.
It depends why people have chosen to eat that way. So, like, you know, there are
laziness or they don't know about all plants.
What I mean is, like, you know, why have you chosen to eat a vegetarian or vegan diet? If you look at the UK and how people are thinking about changing their diet, it's something like 60% of people would consider changing their diet for health reasons. Mm. So the narrative that you're suggesting, like, plays into that. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But actually, and obviously this is like you can choose multiple reasons.
Yeah.
55% is for environmental reasons. Mm. And I think 35% is for ethical reasons. So... Mm. In those buckets, the health thing doesn't play as big a role, and actually, it's just they're just trying to find easy ways to do something that matters to them.
I see that now.
I think when you zoom out and look at the plant kingdom in general and like the role of plants in our life, like as we humans have found ways to use these plants in weird and wonderful foods, and I think it's okay for now to do that and to celebrate it and to. You know, help people explore and find new ways of eating. But yeah, we think that, you know, there's much more to come and that over time, health will prevail because
I guess it's like novelty value still at the moment, isn't it? And like you said, trying to recruit people by pretending that's a steak or this or that. But Ellen, for you, as a vegan, how do you feel when you see something that is pretending to be a piece of meat?
I don't care as long as it's not meat. If someone's not eating meat, then they're not eating. I don't care if it's called a sausage roll, but it's got no sausage. Yeah. Or if it's called a cauliflower steak, it doesn't have meat in it. So as far as I'm concerned, if someone's eating that because they've picked that rather than the sausage roll that's got meat in it, all good, you know?
And there are studies on like the naming of, in our case, dishes or parts of dishes, as I was saying, and the role... that calling it a sausage or a steak or using kind of evocative language has on people making the positive choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very difficult to suggest that eating a more plant-based diet isn't a positive choice.
Mm-hmm.
So from an environmental angle, from a health angle, from like a policy angle, it's important to actually find ways to promote that, which is why I think it's important.
Okay, interesting discussion.
It is interesting, and it's great that everyone's kind of talking more about this stuff.
Just to go back to your point on the tofu, I agree that the naming, it sort of gives a certain familiarity, so it shows the customer the use case in their diet, whether it's a nugget or a cheese. But the kind of danger with that, and why I think, and I'm sure Al would agree, why it's not super sustainable, is that it sets a new product that could be delicious in its own right up for comparison. So then there's a risk that it'll always be, well, this isn't really feta cheese, this is a little bit rubbish.
Right.
But actually, if you didn't call it feta, maybe people would like it. So you sort of, it's a double-edged sword. You need it because it's the entry point and it is a quick way of conveying to the consumer what it is and how you enjoy it.
Yeah.
but then you shortchange the product because you set it up for comparison.
Sure.
So it's so hard.
That's
to
difficult.
Know.
It's almost like let plants hold their own because
exactly.
they can. You know,
they
don't
can.
Let them masquerade as meat. So,
yeah.
I guess it's always developing, isn't it?
It is. So, yeah, let's go back to your meals.
Yeah.
Do you have any available now for me? No, not really. I'm only joking. So, I was saying before, I think, when we weren't recording, how I am sometimes on a busy day, haven't got much time in the evening, my husband and I are really hungry. We pick the meal, the all plants meal that can go in the microwave as opposed to the oven because it might take less time. And then on a Friday, Saturday, we've got more time, we'll use the oven, you know. Why are some best microwaved, some best in the oven? How does it work?
Just naturally, that's the way that the dishes fall. So we do extensive testing to define the cook time tests.
Okay.
And some things really benefit from that lovely sort of caramelization that you get in the oven.
Yeah.
And some dishes benefit from a sort of more steamed environment. So right. as an example, like our new sweet and sour noodle stir fry, sweet and sour stir fry, it, you know, naturally that would have steamed vegetables. It doesn't have lots of burnt flavours or caramelised flavours. But something like a moussaka, where you want a lovely golden top and kind of crispy edges,
that would 100%.
Yeah. Another favourite?
<Yeah. laughs>
That would very much benefit from the oven.
Cashew
so,
mac, sorry.
Oh. I've got to tell you, I had a few of these when I was staying at my friend Lisa's in Ipswich. I was staying in her house for a couple of weeks, and she probably doesn't even know that I stole all of these all plants
oh,
meals out of
know.
Her freezer.
She'll know.
And then one every
she'll
day. Like, and that's how I explored the all plants diet. Yeah.
Do you remember which ones you tried?
I remember a really good ratatouille.
Cool.
Yeah.
That one's a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe something with lentils as well. Yeah, with the orzo. Oh, yeah. That was a Greek influence. Yeah. Yeah.
Has she spoken to you since?
No, I don't know if she listens to the podcast.
To be honest,
but yeah,
if you'd
not
come
staying
to
there again,
and eaten all my all plants, it would not be friends.
It would be fisticuffs at dawn. But, like, how is all plants that? I see you've got your first TV ad. But how does all plants sit? Like, is it kind of almost a meal plan, or is it to be used alongside a diet of other foods that you're preparing yourself? How do you position that?
So, much like with Ellen, a lot of our customers, most of our customers, when they're not having all plants for dinner, they'll cook themselves.
Mm.
And really what we're helping our customers do is have really healthy freezer full of delicious food, whether that's, you know, right now it's mainly dinners, but then we're extending that. So our role changes between different customers. We have some who order on a weekly basis, eat all plants, lunch and dinner.
Yeah.
We have some that order every 4 weeks or every 6 weeks. And yeah, we're learning more and more about like how we best serve people in that way. But ultimately it's, you know, it's really great quality food that's tasty, healthy, and always there when you need it.
Mm.
So yeah, this year we'll become less of a we definitely will continue to have like meal plan oriented offerings if that's what we're looking for, but ultimately we're trying to just make sure that, you know, that freezer that you don't really use very much
and
it's full of junk, we can make it like a healthy treasure trove of delicious dishes.
Definitely. Actually, before we I know we're going to close up in a minute, but I want to ask, you mentioned you're doing breakfasts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, so these are breakfasts, like in inverted commas, ready meals. Like that hasn't been seen before, has it? Like what?
There are. I mean, you can kind of go and grab from prep.
Yeah. What sort of breakfast
kind of
are you doing then?
So we've started with a range of three. So we've got three flavours, and they're a combination of sort of whole grain porridges and overnight oats, but much sort of more dressed up than you might.
Yeah.
Because I do one at home most days, but it's so basic. So this had the. I'll describe one of them, which is a mango and turmeric sort of chia pot.
Oh, wow. Oh,
so
my God.
Beautiful mango and like coulis at the base. A lovely body of sort of chia seeds, oats, a little bit of kind of cardamom, turmeric. It's a beautiful yellow colour. And then garnished with lots of like an omega sprinkle. So pumpkin seeds, sesame seeds, sunflower rather, and some dried mango on top. So it's kind of certainly something a little bit more exciting than you might have time to prepare with all the will in the world.
Sounds better than Special K, doesn't it?
And hopefully more, you know, you grab it from your own freezer. Either you take that the night before so it thaws and you can have it as an overnight oats, or you can take it to work with you, pop it in the microwave and have it as a hot porridge. So they're really versatile, and they kind of, I suppose, challenge the slightly less exciting or more expensive or less interesting grab-and-go offerings that you might be able to get on the high street.
So it's possible that we could have all of our nutritional needs
solved.
soul. Breakfast, yeah. Lunch, yeah. Meal.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And we could do that. Like, literally, we could live off that. It would be all the nutrition that we need in a day.
How do you, because obviously the meals I've eaten before I haven't paid for, how do you sell them? Do you sell them as like a batch or ones? I don't even know.
No, that's good to ask. Yeah. So it's a changing tide where we're learning, we're trying out different things all the time. But the main part, the main way you order now, right now, is 6 meals at a time.
Okay.
Come in a box and you can add on desserts or breakfast. Mm-hmm. And then you can change those 6 meals up as you like when you continue a subscription. Mm-hmm. Or obviously you can cancel if it's not working for you. But then, yeah, over time, you'll see it kind of transform into less about only the 6 meals, then top-ups, and just more of a collection of different bits and bits you can buy.
So just come in, lovely packaging, which is all recyclable.
It's all returnable as well.
All returnable, recyclable. I've actually used, you know, like the... the insulation. Yeah. I've used it on the allotment, so amazing. I've actually wrapped my pots with that insulation in winter time.
We should
so
come
keep
to
them warm.
That's
so, yeah, you know. It's, anyway, it's all good.
So that insulation, it's made from upcycled cotton. So we've been really conscious to choose materials and constantly improve the material choices we make so that they're as best as possible for the environment. Mm-hmm. One of the really hard ones is actually the dish packaging itself, which we've. At the moment, it's paper-based, it's recyclable, but even there, the rules around recycling are constantly kind of becoming ever more mysterious. So we're actually making a change later in this year to ensure that it's even more recyclable, which sounds uncommittal, but basically the RAP, who are the government body on this, are changing the regulations, bringing in new machinery, so we're always trying to be front-footed about how we approach packaging, if you like.
Okay.
Cool. My banana was wrapped in that insulation.
Yeah? Is that the start of a joke?
A banana plant, but you wouldn't get a banana plant.
Right.
Only you would say that. Uh-huh. Anyway, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Like, I think this is, I love Jess. We're chatting about plants, food, and veganism. This is like all in one amazing for me. So.
I've just remembered something I want to show you.
Uh-oh.
What? Are you ready?
So we just had it, the shirt ripped open. Was it beetroot?
Beetroot. I've got a beetroot t-shirt on.
Yeah.
Basically, Michael has ripped open his shirt.
That was unexpected. That was really unexpected.
Almost
I
like...
I almost forgot.
I thought it was about to happen.
I did give him the look. As
I wore
say,
it for the photos.
This isn't funny. What are you going to do?
Amazing.
But he ripped open his shirt a bit like a dream boy. Is that what you want to be?
Yeah, exactly.
To
I've got my
unveil
boss.
Unveil this crazy t-shirt.
That was Bosch, actually. Yeah, because it's the summer version. Yeah.
Is it Bosch? Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Anyway,
didn't expect that at all.
Thank you. So I'm
thank
sorry.
You.
I don't know why I do this with him. Brilliant.
Your mung bean.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, cool. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.
Hi, everyone. So we want to use this platform to talk about what's happening now across the world in response to racism and the killing of George Floyd. Racism is still part of our lives. It shouldn't be. And we have to tackle it once and for all and end it. So over the past week, Michael and I, we've been researching podcasts and films and books. We've been learning, we've been listening, and we've been watching in order to educate ourselves better about racism. And I think that in order to face it and to change it, then educating is absolutely the way to go. We found lots of resources that we've watched and listened to, which we'll share with you in a moment. But first of all, I just wanted to talk about my observations that I've seen here since being in the US, which is, of course, where the protests all started. I'm in the south of America, where we know that racism was at its most horrendous. And I've learned a lot from being here already. So months back, I went to the Civil and Human Rights Museum in Atlanta. If you ever get the chance to go, go. I'm also driving on my own through Georgia, and I found some what I can only call kind of like a group of old shacks. And after researching it, they're opposite an old gold mine, and they were actually where slaves lived. And the slaves were then picked up and taken to the wealthy landowners to build their ranches and work the land. And this kind of really opened up my eyes to racism and slavery and the history of all of that. What I've seen here in America is so much segregation, a huge gap between poverty and wealth, gentrification, which I didn't even know what that meant. And we were walking around in Charlotte and we found a sign and it said, "Slaves are buried here, stop gentrification now." And there's some what looked like graves. And I said to my husband, "What is gentrification?" I mean, I hadn't even heard of it before. And it's actually to do with improving an area so it conforms to middle class taste. So it means that the original residents have to move because of the cost of living. They can't afford it anymore, which affects a community. It affects the culture. It affects the history. And so that really kind of made me open my eyes much more to racism and the history of why we live in a world with this still going on. Of course, more recently we've had the protests and the riots. I don't agree with the riots. I don't agree with violence. It takes away from the cause, the important cause. And here in Charlotte, there's been this amazing mural that's been painted on one of the main roads in Uptown. It says Black Lives Matter, and artists came together to paint it, taking kind of a letter or a couple of letters each. And I went down there whilst that it was being painted, and it was just the most beautiful thing to see. It was both art and it was community, and it was everyone of all races coming together to make change and to make history. And that was really important moment for me to see that, and I think for so many other people. So, you know, it's crazy when you think about it, how many black people have shaped all of our lives, many who we know, you know, from arts and literature, music, sport, food, medicine, you know, all of those names like Otis Redding, you know, Bob Marley, Beyonce, Maya Angelou, who obviously wrote one of the most famous books of all time, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, and Ralph Ellison, who is a well-known black author he's known for The Invisible Man, James Baldwin, he wrote Notes of a Native Son, so being black in the US during the 1950s, during the Civil Rights Movement, it's about that. And then we have sports people like Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Usain Bolt, Venus and Serena Williams, all these amazing, amazing people who shape our lives, and racism still exists. Mind-blowing. And of course then there's also Barack and Michelle Obama. So yeah, big topic. We decided that we needed to learn more. We wanted to learn and watch and listen, and we've got some podcast films that we have enjoyed, in that it's educated us better, that we'll just run through before I just talk a little bit more about horticulture and diversity in horticulture. And also Michael has some fabulous accounts for you to follow on socials as well, from black people doing great things in the world of gardening. So there's a TEDx talk called Not All Superheroes Wear Capes. So it's about people who face challenges, who won't conform, who make change happen. and we need to be doing that. TV and films, there's a documentary called The 13th. It's about racism and policing. That was actually Oscar nominated. 12 Years a Slave, which is about a man who was a free man, but he was sold to slavery. So it's about his journey. Let the Fire Burn is a documentary about a clash between protesters and the police. It's harrowing. And if it makes you feel uncomfortable, then I think that is the point. Teach Us All is about segregation in schools. It is in the US, but we can all learn from that. And of course, we also have to talk to and speak to children about this. So I haven't watched any of these, but I'm reliably informed that these films and documentaries are really good for kids. So remember The Titans, The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind, Hard Lessons, and Becoming, which is actually by Michelle Obama. There's some podcasts that we've listened to as well, which can really be helpful in educating and thinking about different viewpoints. So Come Through is it covers topics with guests about activism, it covered freedom of speech and white fragility, and there's one called Floodlines, which actually covers the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina and how that was dealt with, and that was really interesting. 1619 was a podcast. It's actually done by the New York Times. They have many different podcasts you might want to tune into, and that's about slaves, African slaves, arriving in what was then the English colony of Virginia. No, I say English because the UK have a huge big part to play in all of this. And Throughline was a really good one, and that's about systemic racism. So there's a few things that you could listen to and watch to help educate about racism and where that's come from. So we then went on to ask the question on social media about diversity in horticulture. We asked what people's opinions are and what people thought about it, what we could do about it. At first it was super quiet, so we haven't really had any answers on Instagram at all, despite us both posting about it, or on Twitter, that kind of thing. But on one post on Michael's Facebook page, I'm going to read out some of the comments. Love Mr. Perry, but this is a bit of a non-starter. Gardening has nothing to do with race or ethnicity. You either love it or you don't. Well said. Well said. We don't need lectures, Michael Perry. You will have folks turning off at this rate, so please stop the pandering. Michael Perry, can you explain why you need to post about racism on your gardening page? I have to ask a question here. What has gardening got to do with racism? Stick to gardening. I'm sick to death of all this nonsense. Just gardening for me, please. It's poverty that restricts hobbies, including gardening. No outside space, no extra cash. It's good to see that there has been an increase in community gardening projects, which enables people without gardens to enjoy the natural world. It's also great to see new allotment sites springing up. Modern gardens are very small, and all layers of society are finding it harder to have their own outside space. One part of history that we should celebrate is our history of parks and public spaces. We need them more than ever, and they need protecting. Black and minority ethnic communities are the most impoverished due to the systemic racism. Many tens of thousands love gardening, always have. I salute you, bravo. Proof in these comments that this is a desperately misunderstood subject. Well done for raising this subject, Michael. Why does horticulture have to be more diverse? Has it not allowed black and minority ethnic people to garden? Enough with this, please. Well said. I couldn't agree with you more. And so on and so forth. So to those of you who don't think that gardening isn't political or linked to race, and gardening is a way to take yourself out of what's going on in the world, absolutely. but all gardening is linked to the land. The land that we garden on, nature doesn't discriminate. Everyone can garden, of course, but there's very many barriers to gardening. And whilst nature doesn't discriminate, it's the humans who work, enjoy, profit and live on the land that do. So on that note, we found many incredible horticultural history makers who were black and who we know very little about. You have to question why that is, but here's a few. George Washington Carver was a highly respected expert in agriculture who completely revitalized, revolutionized soil by devising a crop rotation system for cotton growing. Of course, we wouldn't be wearing half the clothes that we wear without cotton. And he also promoted the use of compost. Look up George Washington Carver. I also read a post that flower farming, whilst certainly in the UK and the US is predominantly a white career and hobby, it was actually a community of black women who brought the concept to Washington, selling their cut flowers on the street until the idea was turned into a moneymaker by white men. Frederick McKinley Jones, he invented one of the most important inventions for modern agriculture, that's the refrigerated truck. Booker T. Washington, who promoted self-sufficiency so that black farmers didn't need to rely on white farmers and landowners for income. So it's really important to know that many black and ethnic minority have contributed to horticulture worldwide, although many have not been included in historic records. Okay, so Michael has been looking into some social media accounts that you can follow. So he's now going to run through those for you. I think the world can only be a better place when it is truly diverse and truly equal.
Okay, I've been looking at some social media accounts that you guys perhaps might consider following and offering your support to. So let's run through those. First of all, remember these are all Instagram accounts. We've got Green Girl Leah. Now, she's an intersectional environmentalist who sets out a very compelling case that all environmentalists should be anti-racist. Next up, you may know him already, Hilton Carter. He's a plant and interior stylist, and he is so inspirational when it comes to indoor plants, houseplants of every shape and size. Absolutely incredible. Country Gentleman Cooks. Now, this is a botanist with the most incredible knowledge and calmness. Go there if you want to see food, plants, music. It's all there. Rag and Bone Man Vintage. This is a guy who's got a really, really great account looking at flower therapy. Two more. So, Awside Farm. So, that is AWESIDE Farm. Sinead and Adam grow organically on an agroecological and regenerative farm. A really, really interesting and stimulating account. And then lastly, we have Land in Our Names. And these guys are working for land reparations across Britain. There's many, many more out there, and I'm sure you've seen them shared on social media and via Instagram over the last week or two. So please do get out there. Support black people in business, horticulture, and all walks of life, because diversity in horticulture is imperative for the future of the industry and, in fact, for life on the planet. Because all lives do matter, but all lives only matter when black lives matter too.
This episode of the Plant-Based Podcast is brought to you by our friends at Natural Grower. Launched in 2019, their award-winning liquid fertilizer and soil conditioner is made entirely from maize. Naturally rich in nitrogen, potash, phosphate, and other trace elements that plants and vegetables love, It is approved by the Soil Association, Vegan Society and Organic Farmers and Growers. Visit naturalgrower.co.uk to nurture your soil and boost your plants and veg. Enter PBP15 for a 15% discount as a PBP subscriber.
Thanks for listening. You should now be at least 25% more obsessed by plants.
Please follow us on social media. You'll find us by typing in the Plant-Based Podcast.
We also have a fabulous website. Go to theplantbasedpodcast.net.
So tell your friends, leave a review. Why not write a letter to your local MP? Please spread the word about the Plant-Based Podcast.
Oh yes, see you next time, plant friends. The theme music for the Plant-Based Podcast is an excerpt from the song Grow by Mikey James. And our editing is done by Gareth Patch of Semi-Echo.